Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Ken Shepherd here in Los Angeles. The show is called Making Money in Real Estate When You Have No Money. And we've been covering a lot of different subjects. Yesterday, we had a wonderful guest who really took a very top-line view of what's going on in the mortgage business in terms of rates and the marketplace and how the market views notes. Today, we're going to talk a little bit more about the structuring of those notes and how that works and working with pricing of notes based on what is going on today in the market. A couple of quick things. We always tell you to use your strengths to find your weaknesses. My name is Ken Shepherd. I've been in real estate for about 30 years. We just closed $26 million in deals recently. Have a $500 million soft proof of funds available for deals we like. We have $200 to $300 million in process and a lot more coming. Call-in number is 347-989-1329. Our website is www.creativeflips.webs.com. Look at the accomplishments and resume tabs. Our telephone number is 310-358-7087. Our email is fci@pacbell.net. And our phone number, 9 to 5 California time, is 818-585-9706. Our Twitter feed is at Ken Shepherd. Our Facebook is Facebook/Ken Shepherd and Facebook/Creative Flips Incorporated. We do a class on Tuesday and Thursday from 9 to 10. And it's a kind of a mastermind class, $20 a person a session. We generally have no more than 20 people in the room. We think it's important to keep it small, and we support everybody as best we can, but we like the think tank environment. If you're interested in that, go to Ken Shepherd, kenshepherd51@yahoo.com, and let me know you're interested in that, and I'll get you set up, and we can go from there. You can also go to kenreradio.com and meet over 140,000 investors. That's free, unless you upgrade your account to a premium account, and we are affiliates if you do upgrade. Let's see, what else can I tell you? So let me do my disclaimer, and then we'll get into the show. Okay, so the disclaimer reads like this. Okay, here we go. This show is intended for only the listeners. All information investment-wise contained in the show has been secured by sources Creative Flips Inc. and Ken Shepherd believes are reliable, but we make no representations or warranties expressed or implied as to the accuracy of the information. The views, opinions, conclusions, and other information expressed in the show are not the responsibility of Creative Flips Inc. in any manner. Creative Flips Inc. and Ken Shepherd accepts no liability for the content of the show or for the consequences of any action taken on the behalf of the investment of the information in the show and the information provided. Creative Flips Inc. and Ken Shepherd recommends you consult with a financial advisor, attorney, accountant, and any other professional that can help you understand and assess the risks associated with any investment opportunity. Okay, so now that's done. So let's talk a little bit about the subject of this show, which is working with notes and structuring notes. Okay, well, first of all, notes and real estate are together but really separate, because notes are the instrument that allows you to take a security interest in a piece of property or in anything else for that matter. You can have a note against a business. You can have notes against all kinds of things. And a note basically is a promise for the borrower to pay the lender whatever the terms and conditions of the note call for. And in real estate, the notes are secured to the property tied in with mortgages and trust deeds, reciting basically all the terms and conditions of how the note works and all of that. And that's all a bit of legal stuff. But essentially, notes and mortgages and deeds of trust are all tied together. So when you talk about notes, you're really talking about notes secured by, in real estate, which is where we're going to talk about today, mortgages and trust deeds, depending on which state you're in. So when a mortgage and a note has a original amount on it, it's the amount that's paid to the borrower in gross 99% of the time, unless it's done as what's called a net funding, which is when they only give the borrower the rest, the money the borrower's getting, and the rest of the money for all the fees and commissions and all that is all left until the borrower pays the note back. But that's very unusual. So we'll stay with the usual, which is if you're doing a loan and you're loaning somebody $100,000 and they're netting $90,000 and they have $10,000 worth of costs, it's a $100,000 funding because that's how much the borrower owes back plus interest. Okay, so when you buy a note or when you have notes, let's start with that. When you have notes secured by real estate, then obviously you want to make sure that the real estate is worth more than the note that you're issuing in the first place. So if you're doing a loan and a property's worth $100,000, you want to make sure you know, looking at the credit of the person and the equity in the property, that you're as protected as you possibly can be. When you're doing loans to people that have not such good credit, you don't go more than 65% or maybe 60% or maybe even lower of the value of the property today. And usually that value is not necessarily the value when you did an appraisal, but the value to sell it on what's called a liquidation value, which has to sell it, which means you can sell the property within 30 days. So if the liquidation value is $100,000, the most you'd probably want to lend it, unless somebody's got great credit, is $65,000. And, of course, if they have better and better credit, maybe you go to 70 or 75 or sometimes even 80% of that value. The other thing you can do to secure your investment is you can take other collateral along with the original collateral of the property that you're loaning on, which is called the primary collateral. And then you can take secondary collateral of whatever the person who's the borrower has available, whether it's a stronger person to qualify them for the loan in terms of their using their credit, somebody that has other assets that they can put up to make the deal work that make it more secure, so they maybe have either CDs or they have other real estate that are free and clear or close to free and clear or whatever they may have that creates what's called cross-collateral. Cross-collateral means that, very simply, it's just one piece of property is your primary, and then you may have any number of pieces of security or collateral that's additional to the original collateral, which is the original property that creates the security for the loan. So let's keep it simple. Let's say you have a property that's worth $100,000 and the guy doesn't have very good credit, the borrower. And let's say they're in foreclosure, they need to refinance, and let's not even worry about short sales or all that kind of stuff. We'll keep it real simple. So if you have a loan of $65,000, okay, the borrower's probably going to net about $55,000 of that, which is $10,000 for costs and fees. Now, that may seem high, and again, we're talking about people who don't have good credit, but those are expensive loans because they're risky, and the interest rates on them are usually high, and they don't last for a long time. They're not long-term loans. They're usually 1 to 3 year loans. Okay, because the investors usually are buying those either as a group in a syndication, which we've talked about in other shows, or they're buying them individually for their own portfolio. So if let's use that example and stay on it. So if it's $65,000, that's $55,000 to the borrower. Well, let's take another example. Say the borrower let's say the property's worth $75,000 and the guy needs $65,000. Well, he doesn't certainly have it in this property, but let's say he knows somebody else that has a free and clear property worth $200,000. Well, that becomes the additional collateral we just talked about, which makes the loan doable, whereas it wouldn't have been doable otherwise. So when you deal with structuring and underwriting, you always want to look at the quality of the borrower. You want to look at the quality of the note, meaning what's it secured by? Is it secured by real estate? Is it secured by other stock or whatever as an additional cross-collateral like we just talked about? What is making that note comfortably secure to the lender? Because the lender is really lending on the collateral. They do not want the asset back. They're not interested in foreclosing. They're not interested in dealing with having problems with it. They just want their interest and they want to get it on time. So we'll look at it from that standpoint. So if the person has better credit, then, of course, you can look at it from the standpoint of them having better credit. And if they have better credit, then they're maybe going to get a higher loan-to-value ratio. And the loan-to-value ratio is simply when you have a property and you owe, stay with the example of $65,000 on a $100,000 property, your loan-to-value ratio is 65% because 65% of the property is tied up in the cost of the collateral. The collateral being that, in this particular case, the real estate. So if you ever have a problem, you know, there's 35% equity cushion behind you. Now, if you don't have a problem, it doesn't really matter. But the reason for the cushion is very simple. If you do have to foreclose, you want enough room behind you to be able to get your money back out and be able to know that you're safely in a position to do so. And at 65% of the value of the property, especially if it's based on liquidation value, that's more likely than not going to be a protected position. On land, usually they go to 40 to 50%. On real estate that's owner-occupied, usually 60 or 65%. And on non-owner-occupied, maybe 65% or even higher if it's income-producing real estate like an apartment building or something. So if you're dealing with people who have good credit, of course, your underwriting standards are going to be higher because you're going to be looking more at their credit, more at who they are, more at what they're all about, and making sure you're really comfortable that they're not going to default on that loan. Because as the lender, you just don't want any trouble. You want that loan to pay on time. You want to be have no problems. People send their payments in. They owe you the money, and you don't have to ever call them. They just send the money in. That's what a good loan would do. It's called a performing loan. On the other hand, a non-performing loan is when a loan is having problems. What's called re-performing loans is when it had problems and it's been rewritten with the lender in order to make it more likely that the borrower can make the payments. So all the underwriting has to do with is looking at the property, looking at the borrower, looking at the note, thinking about what kind of coupon or interest rate it's called actually that you want on that loan, if you want a prepayment penalty, you know, the things that you want to do to ensure that you're going to get the right kind of return on your investment for putting up the money to buy the note. Now, when you're doing whatever size loan you're doing, the concept is basically the same. Nothing different whether you're doing a $100,000 property or you're doing a $65,000 loan like we talked about, or you're doing a $5 million property and you're doing a 65% of that value. It's a little over $3 million. Now, if you're doing, again, somebody that has good credit, that may mean that you go higher in the loan-to-value ratio. You may also consider the cross-collateral and all those kind of things. Now, there's what's called originating loans, okay, which means that you basically start the loan off. It's a new loan on the property, and you're looking for payments. Of course, there's refinancing, which is when somebody takes out your loan through another loan. And the other thing is, of course, if somebody buys your loan. Now, buyers, investors, that is, sometimes buy loans. Like, let's say you have a loan on a property, and we'll go back to that example of $65,000, and you bought that loan, you paid $65,000, you got a nice interest rate, maybe you got a point or two discount on the loan, so you got the loan for $65,000 times 98%, and because you got the benefit of the discount of the for the principal of $65,000, so you made a little bit there when the loan pays off, and or during the term of the loan, and you also, of course, have an interest rate and maybe a prepayment penalty and other features to the note. Now, when somebody comes and buys the loan from you, if they want to buy it, they can either buy it at what's called par, which means they pay you what's owed on the loan, or they buy it what's called a discount, and the discount means they may buy it from you for 90% of what you have in it, 80% or whatever. So if, let's say, you carried back a loan on a property you sold and the property was free and clear other than your loan and your loan's a first. Now, let's say you move to another part of the world and you're still collecting on your loan. Well, maybe you don't want to be bothered with that loan anymore, or maybe something happened, or maybe you inherited the loan or whatever, and you want to sell it. Well, the deeper you sell it discount-wise, the better off it's going to be for the new buyer, and it's going to be easier to sell the loan. It's just like anything else that you're selling, whether it's real estate or otherwise. You always find the price point when you know you're, when. Here's how I think you find the price point. You make an offer on something and you don't hear anything, okay? Or you have a property you're selling, let's say, and you don't hear anything, and you drop the price another 5%, and you still don't hear anything. Then you drop it another 5%. Now you get a few phone calls. Now you drop it another 10%. Now your phone calls are much more often. You're going to get to a point where there's going to be a lot of people calling you, and that's when you know you hit your market. And then, of course, you might get multiple offers in order to find that market for that particular asset. But at the end of the day, you want to make sure that the price is reflective of what the market will tell you. And the market will always tell you what something's worth. That's how markets determine. So if you have a note that you're selling and somebody says to you, I'll give you, let's say it's a $65,000 note. They say they'll give you $50,000 for it. Well, you can either do that or you can just hold on to the note, or you can sell part of the note. I mean, you own the whole note. Maybe you sell half the note. Maybe you sell just half the payments. There's lots of things you can do when you're dealing with notes. The other thing you can do, and this is where it gets into creative financing, and we like this a lot, is you could take a loan that you owe. Let's say you have a $65,000 loan on a house, and the guy's making his payments, and it's a $100,000 property, rather. So you're at 65% loan to value. Did you know that you can take that loan and you could borrow against that loan probably about 50 to 60% of the value of the loan? So let's just say you've invested $65,000 and you decide you want to go into another investment, but you don't want to sell this investment. You can borrow against the loan. Sort of like when you go to the stock market and you buy stock and you want to borrow against your value of your stock, it's called margining your account because you're taking a margin on the stock. Same thing here. You're taking a margin on the note against the property for $65,000. So maybe you could borrow $30,000 or $35,000. You'd have an interest rate that you have to pay. And the security for your loan is the loan that you have with the house that you own, the note of, that's $65,000 on a house worth $100,000. So you could maybe borrow $30,000 that way. It's called hypothecating the note. Let's talk a little bit about how you find these notes. Well, certainly when you're looking to do loans, and you're buying them for your own account, if you're not a bank or something like that, you can buy them through the private market. There's always private notes being created every day with borrowers and deals all over the place. And you just can look to call the brokers that are loan brokers in your area, and you can ask them if they have any notes that you could buy. And if they're private, if they're dealing in private loans, they very well may, or they may be able to sell you a portion of a loan. If you're dealing in large loans with banks and stuff like that, like Bank of America, folks like that, chances are you won't be able to do that because it doesn't work that way. So let's talk a little bit about what's called securitization, mortgage securitization. When you have one loan that's just basically standing on its own, it's just a loan that is by itself. However, what happens a lot is, let's say you have 1,000 loans and you're a bank. You've made all these loans to people, and now you want to figure out how do you get your money back. Well, one of the ways you can do it is you could take all the loans, put them together in a bundle, take them to the people that sell bundles of loans, usually the folks on Wall Street and big investment firms, and then they take the loans and they turn them into bonds, and then they're using the loans as security for the bond, and then they sell the bonds, depending on what the yield of the notes are that are inside the bond. So let's just say all the notes yield the same. Keep it simple. So the notes yield 12%. Well, if you sell the bonds at face value, then people are going to get a 12% coupon. If you sell the bonds at less than face value, then people are going to get better than a 12% return because they bought 12% interest on the loans and they get a discount on the paper and the loans as well, so they got a better rate. So mortgage securitization could be a really good way through large firms to buy into pools of loans without buying one loan. The other thing is that when a loan goes into foreclosure and it's in a securitization, it's very hard to buy that loan out of that securitization because there's investors that own the entire pool of loans and they may not be so open to selling you the loan. So if you go to a company, they say, well, this particular loan is tied up in this securitization pool, and it's the note that you want to buy, you may have more problems buying it than if you just buy something that's not in a securitization pool. And so when you're buying a loan, you want to do as much as you can to make sure that it's separate and apart from any other loans and that you're just buying that loan. Or if you're buying, like we bought 3 loans recently, but they were 3 separate loans with 3 separate borrowers. We just bought them in a package from a bank, so the bank sold those 3 notes as a group. However, they're not in a securitization position because they're not in a pool. They're not in a mortgage bond. They're nothing like that. So when we talk about notes, we talk about yield, and we talk about loan to value and things like that. Yield is a fancy word for what your return is. So to keep it simple, if you have a 12% interest only note, that means you're getting 1% a month. You're getting 12% a year. So if you put up $100, you're getting $112 that year. If you put up, or you're getting $12 back on your $100, let's say, because let's say it's a three-year note. So you get $12 the first year, $12 the second year, and $12 the third year. And at the end of the third year, you get your extra $100 back. So you made $136 in 3 years. So it's very, very simple to do that kind of a thing. Now, loans can get very complicated. The interest rates can be different. There's variable loans. There's fixed loans. There's lots of different things that you can do with loans in order to make them more attractive to the borrower. You can start off at a lower rate and then have it increase over time. You can tie it to what's called an index, which means that it changes according to, let's say, the 10-year Treasury bond at a certain date every year. Like we have one of our loans on one of our properties, interestingly enough, it's at 3%, and today, or the other day, we got a notice from the bank that when it renews, it's a variable, it's a rental property, and it renews at 3.25%. And I thought that was interesting that interest rate would go up when the market is just flooded and going down. But then it says to me that there's a possibility on the horizon that we're going to see inflation, because when you see interest rates starting to rise, then that's an indication that inflation is not far behind. So keep that in mind when you're dealing with any of your properties, just a word to the wise. Now, again, back to notes. Okay, so notes simply is a fancy term for a piece of paper that's a contract between a borrower and a lender that basically outlines all the terms and conditions of the note, creates what's called recitals, which are just generally all the things that go along with the note so that people who are purchasing the note, and who, whether they're buying it or they're buying it later or buying it originally, they know basically what they're buying. So the notes, you know, of course, when they as long as they're paying, that's one thing. If they're not paying, they become non-performing. And, of course, a non-performing loan loses its value because it's not worth as much as a performing loan, because it's more likely than not default. And depending on whether the equity is really there behind the note, like let's say it's 65% loan to value and the property drops 20% in value because of the market change, now you only have $15,000 in protective equity. And if you have to foreclose and sell it at $80,000, assuming you can get $80,000 for it, by the time you're done with your closing costs, your holding costs, and everything else, it'd be very, very a good thing and very lucky for you to get your $65,000 returned to you in full. So it's risky. So, but at the same time, that's why you get a high interest rate and a prepayment penalty and all those things that you don't get when the loans are really good quality loans and the people have excellent credit and excellent income. So you can find these loans by going to your local loan broker, and they can tell you all kinds of loans that you can buy as investments. The way you can use the, you can buy them, I believe, you have to check with your accountant or your attorney on this, you may be able to use money that's in your 401k to buy these loans. We heard about a gal the other day that used a 401k to buy a property at an auction that she paid like $1,200 for that's worth like $38,000, and she's going to try and sell it. We recommended to her that she try and sell it for like $15,000. She wants to sell it for like $30,000. I frankly don't think she'll get more than $15,000. In order to sell it quickly, because obviously, like I said before, the cheaper the price, the more buyers you're going to find, and the faster you're going to move the asset. And to me, I'd rather get $15,000 now than hold on to it and hope I'll get $30,000, because it needs, in this case, $8,000 worth of work. So it's not worth $38,000 minus eight. It's worth $38,000 minus eight times two, because that's how much you have to put into it to make it worth money. So it's really worth 38 minus 16, which is 22. So that's why I'm saying if you got 15,000, you'd be doing really well. I'd be surprised if you get 15. You might get somewhere between 10 and 15, maybe 12.5 or something like that. So anyway, back to the notes thing. So you can find notes by advertising in the paper that you're a note buyer. You can advertise on the internet all over the place that you're a note buyer. You can You can underwrite the notes just like the original people did when they did the loan that you're buying. You can create new loans with people that you're buying property from that carry that loan, as the borrower. You can also create loans when you're selling property and carry the loan as the seller. So loans can be a very effective way to get into real estate, and a very interesting way to deal with real estate. Of course, with loans and with underwriting and all the things, it's all about what's the value of the property, what's the quality of the borrower, how does everybody look on paper, and at the end of the day, what is truly what does that situation look like in terms of a risk model? That's the key to loans, is risk mitigation. Mitigation meaning try to stay away from any risk. That's the key. So with notes, you structure them the way we talked about, or you can structure them any number of different ways, and you can get people to help you structure them who are loan brokers and mortgage brokers and things like that, or attorneys or CPAs. You can use them to buy and sell property. You can use them, you can borrow against them. You can take a note and you can use a note as collateral to buy another piece of property if somebody will accept it. There's a lot of things you can do with them because they're an asset. So essentially what you want to do is you want to use loans to your benefit as a creative tool. Now, excuse me, the other way you can find loans is, of course, just watch the loans that might be for sale. Lots of people advertise loans for sale. And if you find a loan for sale, you can make an offer to buy it. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to accept your offer, but you can make an offer. Or, as I said, you can create original loans. And so either way, loans can be a wonderful vehicle for building your portfolio and working with creative financing. And we've seen people do a lot of different things with loans. We have a deal we're working on right now that's about $9 million net to the borrower, secured by $50 million in bonds. And those bonds are 8.25% payable bonds. They're from another country, but it's a very strong bond. It's registered and all the right things. There's an attorney working with us who's been a securities lawyer for 40 years, and we're looking to do a loan on that through one of our investors where we may participate or we may package the loan. And the loan will be probably about $10 or $11 million in terms of the gross and $9 million in terms of the net. So at the end of the day, loans could be done against lots of things. And, of course, in that case, we're looking to the bonds for security. And in addition to that, there's a property that they're refinancing that should finish within 45 days that they're asking us to take for security. So we have two levels of security. We have a personal guarantee from a very, very wealthy individual. And so that's all part of underwriting. You know, when you do underwriting, because I was asked the other day by a guy I was talking to on the phone, he said, you know, can you talk a little bit about in your show about underwriting? Well, of course, you can talk to people at banks about that kind of stuff, and people that are mortgage brokers and loan brokers and stuff like that. But basically, underwriting is just a fancy term for research and making sure that you check everything out, look underneath the hood, as they say, and make sure the car is running nice and smooth. And that's actually a pretty good example. You always want something that's running well. You want to check it all the time to make sure it continues to run well and service it. And as long as you do all those things properly, you should have a pretty good experience with loan. So we have about 60 seconds left. It's been really nice being with everybody today. We're going to have some wonderful guests coming up. I'm really excited about some of the people I'm talking to about being guests on the show. We're getting more and more people listening to the show. And we're kind of really appreciative of everybody listening because it helps us understand what the topics of interest are for us to continue to focus our energies on as we kind of market study what people are listening to and what they want to listen to more and more. So with that, I have about 30 seconds left. We'll be back on air tomorrow with a topic I'm sure of interest, and we look forward to being with you and working with you and connecting with you. Again, our phone number is 310-358-7087, 358-7087. Our email is fci@pacbell.net. And our cell during the day, 9 to 5 California time, is 818-585-9706. Thanks again for listening, and you guys have a great day, and make it a wonderful one and a prosperous one. Bye-bye.